after 663 episodes, The Simpsons continues to be the longest-running American sitcom in history. 31 seasons. I remember when I first started watching The Simpsons, this was not really held in high esteem in many church circles. Many people thought, you know, The Simpsons were pretty bad. Ironically, today, The Simpsons on television is only one of a few families on television that regularly attends church. So for 30 years, The Simpsons have been on. Millions of people have been watching The Simpsons. And one of the characters on The Simpsons is Ned Flanders. Ned Flanders is a devout Christian. He lives next door to Homer Simpson. Ned Flanders is one of those guys that would be considered very nice. And this is the topic of our discussion this morning, is the niceness amongst Christians. See, Flanders is a great guy. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of good things about Ned Flanders that I would admire. His kindness far exceeds my own at times. The problem with Flanders' niceness, though, is he comes across as often a pushover with no boundaries, who doesn't really speak his mind. And worse, he enables people around him, especially his neighbor, Homer Simpson. And for many people, this is what Christians look like. They're just super nice people who do nice, kind things. But there's this other side where they don't really speak their mind and they enable the people around them. They don't have boundaries. This series is called Beyond Religion, and we've defined religion as a system of behavior created to prove our worth to God. And religion will create often two types of people: the judges and the jesters. The judges, of course, are out to show how everyone else is stupid. Everyone is stupid except for them. They'll point out faults in their boss, in their spouse, in their political leaders, in the police. They'll point out faults in all kinds of people. They are the judges. And so they are trying to gain favor by showing God how bad other people are. But this morning we're talking about the jesters. The jesters just want everyone to have a good time. They want to smooth things over, have nice, calm waters, and to have everyone think they're just really nice people. And this is religious behavior too, because it's an attempt to show God how good we are. This is the downside of being nice. You can be a judge or you can be a jester. Both are the products of religion, a system of behavior created to prove our worth to God. And Jesus was neither. See, jesters are nice. Nice is, as I'm defining it, nice is having the appearance of kindness at the expense of truthfulness. Nice is having the appearance of kindness at the expense of truthfulness. And you know people like this. Hey, you might even be a person like this. The problem is, in church circles, is jesters are often celebrated. See, judges in church circles, they often get reprimanded. You can't talk about other people. You have no right to judge. And so we are pretty keenly aware of judges in our midst and judgmentalism. But when it comes to jesters, jesters can fly under the radar. Jesters, nice people, actually get promoted. They can become ministry leaders. They can be voted on the board. They can become pastors, denominational leaders even. So what? So they're nice. Big deal. So they have an appearance of kindness at the expense of truthfulness. So what? Well, the problem is our mission. Our mission is inviting people to follow Jesus. It's not inviting people to be nice. And here's the thing. Jesus wasn't always nice. Jesus was not a jester. He was not a judge, nor was he a jester. So what was Jesus? Well, we're going to discover this morning that following Jesus means being authentic. Following Jesus means being authentic. And we're going to look at two different stories in the life of Jesus both involving the fisherman Peter. And Peter is a guy who I can relate to. He has one failure after another. And in order to look at this first story, you have to understand the context of what just happened. Jesus just asked, "But who do you say that I am?" And Peter is the guy who got it right. He's the one who had the right answer. He said, "You're the Messiah. You're the one we've been waiting for." And everyone was like, "Wow, whoa, man, that's great." And Peter felt pretty good about himself. If you've ever been the one person in the class who got the answer right, you know how Peter was feeling at this particular point. So he's on a high. He's feeling great. And then we move on from that story quite quickly. And it says, "From then on, Jesus began to tell his disciples plainly that it was necessary for him to go to Jerusalem, and that he would suffer many terrible things at the hands of the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of religious law. He would be killed, but on the third day he would be raised from the dead." And I'm reading from Matthew 16, 21 to 23. So here Jesus is saying, "Look, I know you're looking for this great Messiah who's going to free you from the Romans, and he's going to have a majority seats in Parliament, and he's going to control Congress and the Senate. He's going to overthrow Rome and all that kind of thing." But here, he's actually telling his disciples he's accepting what they would consider failure, complete and utter failure. He says, "I'm going to be killed. I am not going to be the one that is going to free you from the Romans." Well, this didn't go over with Peter. Probably didn't go over really well with any of them. And so it says, "But Peter took him aside and began to reprimand him for saying such things. 'Heaven forbid, Lord,' he said, 'this will never happen to you.'" Now see, stop right there for a second. Jesus could have been a jester. He could have been a nice guy who just wanted everyone to leave happy. Smooth things over. He could have said, it's just Peter. He's just mouthing off. It's no big deal. Just ignore him. And what's the point anyway? Peter will never change. He could have just deflected and move on. He could have been the jester. But Jesus is not a jester. And those who follow Jesus cannot be jesters either. It says, "Jesus turned to Peter and said, 'Get away from me, Satan. You are a dangerous trap to me. You are seeing things merely from a human point of view, not from God's.'" Jesus was not nice. He did not have the appearance of kindness at the expense of truthfulness. He was very truthful. In fact, so truthful, I'm a little uncomfortable with what he says here, because he says to Peter four different things, none of which are nice. He says, "Get away from me. I need space. I'm putting down boundaries. I need you to get away from me." That's the first thing. Then he tells him what he's saying is satanic. It's from the pit of hell. That's what a thing to say to your friend. "Get away from me, Satan," he says. And then he says, "You are a dangerous trap to me. You are actually tempting me away from my mission." Now, by the way, just to time out for a second, you know, a lot of people will accuse the writers of the New Testament of making up legendary material about Jesus, that they made stuff up to make him look better than he really was. But if that was the case, they would have never included this statement by Jesus. They would have never made him this vulnerable, that he would actually say, "You are a dangerous trap to me." That is a level of transparency, a level of honesty that you would not give the hero of the story, especially in those times. And then he says, "You are seeing things merely from a human point of view, not from God's. You have, your perspective is too narrow, Peter. You're not seeing things from the broader perspective." These are not nice things to say. These are not jester type things to say. Now, he could have said, "Hey, I understand where you're coming from, Peter, and I appreciate your concern, but I know what I have to do, and nothing and no one can ever stop me." And there would be, if this was the movie of his life, there'd be this great orchestral score that swells in the background as the heroic Jesus says these great words. It says, "You can never detract me from my mission." But that's not what Jesus says. Jesus says, "You are a dangerous trap to me." You see, Jesus was true to his thoughts and his feelings. He was authentic, and following Jesus means being authentic. So that was door number one. Let's check out the second story. Again with Peter, this time it's at the Last Supper. This time, this is the night before Jesus was going to die. So emotions are high. Of course, the disciples, they don't know what's going on. But Jesus says, Simon, Simon, which is another name for Peter. Peter, Peter, Satan has asked to sift each of you like wheat. But I have pleaded in prayer for you, Peter, that your faith should not fail. So when you have repented and turned to me again, strengthen your brothers. And I'm reading from Luke 22, verses 31 to 34. Now, it's really easy to read what Jesus just said and kind of miss it. But Peter didn't miss it. Because what he just heard is, yes, Satan is after him. He definitely heard that. But it was the second part that he probably found the most disturbing, the most causing of defensiveness. It says, so when you have repented, wait a second, what do you mean repented? I haven't done anything yet. I haven't done anything wrong. I haven't sinned. Why would I be repenting? He says, when you have repented and turned to me again, strengthen your brothers. Now, this probably made Peter very, very, very defensive. And so he ups the ante to prove his loyalty. And it says, Peter said, Lord, I am ready to go to prison with you and even to die with you. Oh, I can really relate to Peter here. I have made promises I have not kept. I have had incredible intentions, and I suspect so have you. And we've all failed to follow through. Peter had great intentions. I don't doubt that maybe in that moment he truly thought he was sincere, that he had it within him to go the distance and even die with Jesus. And if Jesus was a jester and he just wanted to make things smooth and have everyone just have a good time and make sure that uncomfortable situations were kind of shoved under the rug, he could have said, ah, Peter, buddy, your intentions are great and I appreciate your loyalty. That would have been a very nice answer. But that's not what Jesus did. It says, but Jesus said, Peter, let me tell you something. Before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you will deny three times that you even know me. Ugh, what a sting that must have been for Peter. After his upping the ante and showing how loyal he was and how ready to die for Jesus he was, and here's Jesus saying, yeah, within 24 hours, you're going to tell three different people you don't even know who I am. Now, why didn't Jesus just be a jester? Why didn't Jesus just say, ah, it's okay, Peter. It's all right. Why did Jesus have to tell him this thing about you would even deny knowing me? I believe the answer is really simple. It's because Jesus loved Peter. And here's what Jesus wanted Peter to know. Jesus wanted Peter to know that, hey, look, I know you're going to fail. I know you're going to fall down. You're going to blow it big time. But here's the thing. Once you have blown it, come on back. And when you've come back, take leadership. Be an influencer over the rest of the disciples, over the rest of the apostles. Be their leader. Strengthen your brothers. He said, take a position of leadership. And isn't this a great message, by the way, for all of us who've ever blown it, who've maybe made promises even to God, and we've blown it. And here, the God that we serve is not the God that just wipes his hands of us and walks away. No, this is a God who keeps inviting us back. And he may even invite us back into leadership, into influence, as he did with Peter. What a great example of who God is. This is Jesus. Jesus was neither judge nor jester. Following Jesus instead, following Jesus means being authentic. And there's three authentic relationship principles that we can derive from these two stories. Principle number one, authenticity is coupled with hope. You'll notice Jesus didn't just dump on Peter and say, hey, you're going to blow it. What a terrible failure you are. Get it together. Why do you have to be such a nincompoop amongst all the disciples? Come on, man. Get it together. That's what judges do. They just dump. They just point out faults. But that's not what Jesus was doing in his authenticity. He coupled it with hope. He said, hey, you're going to blow it, but come on back. I've got a place for you. I've got a place of leadership for you. Things will get better. Jesus affirmed the relationship he had with Peter. He told him that he had value, that he had a future. This is what people who are authentic, who follow Jesus, do. They couple authenticity with hope. They don't just dump. They couple authenticity with hope. And sometimes we forget this. It's really easy to point out other people's faults, but it's got to be coupled with hope, because that's what following Jesus means. That's what he did. Principle number two, authenticity relies on God's wisdom, not my own. I don't have time to get into it right here, but throughout the four biographies of Jesus' life, Jesus continued to point out the fact that he relied on the Father's wisdom to speak. He didn't speak on his own. He spoke what the Father told him. He relied on the Father's wisdom to teach. And all too often, see, judges will be high on opinion and low on reflection. They'll tell people their opinion, but it's their own opinion. It's only their own opinion. It's not the Father's opinion. So followers of Jesus sometimes will make incredible truth claims about who to vote for, how to potty train, how to date, what business to frequent, what entertainment is acceptable. And they'll say these things as though they are the authority on these things, as though God himself agrees with them, even though it's not in the Bible anywhere. And that's the danger. See, Jesus didn't do this. Jesus relied on the Father's wisdom, and so should we. If we are going to be authentic, if we are going to let loose with our opinions, we better make sure that they line up with Scripture. Now, does that mean we can't have opinions about things that aren't in Scripture? Of course we can. But we need to make sure that when we say these things to our friends, our family, our coworkers, that they understand we are speaking as human beings, not as representatives of God, as though God agrees with our opinions on these peripheral matters. See, so often our truth claims, let's be honest, our truth claims, what we believe is right, if it's not found in the Bible, is more based on our upbringing, our culture, our emotions, and our experiences. And those four things contribute greatly to what we think is right. And when we start telling people what is right and wrong based on those things and not God's word, we are breaking an authenticity principle. And we are breaking our mission of following Jesus. Jesus didn't just flippantly give his opinion. He spoke the Father's wisdom. Principle number three, authenticity is personal and direct. You notice when Jesus had a problem with Peter, Jesus didn't go to John and say, boy, that Peter, whew, he's really blowing it. He needs to get it together. You should really say something to Peter. I mean, you know, he's your friend. You know, you should do something about that. Never does it. Nor does he, you know, write him a note or an email and say, dear Peter, I regret to inform you. No, he never says that. He goes directly to Peter. He says, Peter, your thinking is evil and I can't be around you if you are going to behave like this. This was not nice. It wasn't the appearance of kindness at the expense of truthfulness. Jesus was absolutely authentic in his relationships. That's what made him so effective. That's what drew people to him. Now we get into it. So why wasn't Jesus nice? I mean, so what? If our churches are filled up with nice people, if we're nice people, isn't that okay? What's the problem with that? There's four problems with that. There's four things that make being a jester detrimental. First of all, jesters limit maturity. You can't fix what you don't know is broken. The other day I was driving in front of a friend of mine and I looked in my rearview mirror and I noticed one of his lights was out. And so when I got home, I sent him a note right away and I said, hey, just so you know, one of your front lights is out. And he said, oh, thank you very much. And then he went and got it fixed. But he would never have known if I didn't point it out. And the same thing with character issues. I know it's difficult, but a lot of us are we have blind sides, blind spots. We don't see the things that are wrecked about our character. And until someone points them out to us, We just don't know, and so we continue on. If we are jesters, jesters don't touch that stuff. Jesters don't talk about character defects. They just want everyone to have a good time. They want everyone, all the waters to be nice and smooth. Authenticity addresses things like maturity. Jesters limit maturity because they don't say what they're seeing. They're not authentic. And so we need to have authenticity in our connect groups, in our churches, in our families. This allows people to grow and mature and become like Jesus. But we have to say something. We have to be authentic. Jesters limit maturity. Number two, jesters are dishonest. Let's face it. Jesters, if you don't really speak your mind, you're usually speaking in half-truths or partial truths. And every relationship, every intimate relationship needs truth. The problem, and I get that there's limits, right? I mean, you don't give all the things that you see to everyone. There's different levels. I get that. The problem with jesters is they tend to be dishonest with everyone. With everyone. It's about peacekeeping at all costs. And where they just want to make sure that everyone has a good time, and that's all they're interested in. And that's not helpful to anyone at all. So, and jesters, by the way, number three, have shallow relationships. Love requires knowing people and being known. And the thing is with jesters, no one really knows what they're thinking because they won't say it. If you are married to a jester, it's a lifetime of he loves me, he loves me not. She loves me, she loves me not. It leaves a person feeling insecure because you have no idea what this person really feels. If you're married to a jester, you're going to feel insecure. And by the way, if you're married to a judge, you're going to feel worthless because they'll be quick to point out all your faults. So if you're married to a jester, you feel insecure. If you're married to a judge, you feel worthless. But if you're married to someone who is authentic, you can know and be known. And that's what creates beautiful, intimate relationships. Number four, jesters are not respected. Yeah, sure, they'll be liked, absolutely. But because no one really knows what they think they're being insincere. And so how can you respect someone that you don't really think is being sincere with you, who you don't think is being completely honest? So jesters limit maturity, jesters are dishonest, jesters have shallow relationships, and jesters are not respected. Those are the reasons Jesus was not a jester. Because the stakes were too high, and Jesus loved people too much to be a jester, to have an appearance of kindness at the expense of truthfulness. See, and it comes down to the difference between peacekeeping and peacemaking. Peacemaking is what Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers. He never said, blessed are the peacekeepers. Jesters are peacekeepers. So what's the difference between a peacekeeper and a peacemaker? A peacekeeper just wants an absence of conflict. So let me show you some specific differences between peacekeepers and peacemakers. Peacekeepers believe that change is worse than being fake. That the upheaval of change in a relationship is worse than having a fake relationship. But peacemakers are the opposite. They believe that being fake, being insincere, having the appearance of kindness at the expense of truthfulness is worse than the upheaval of the change that would have to take place to grow. Peacekeepers value not fighting. They just want an absence of open conflict. Sweep it under the rug, pretend that it isn't there. They value not fighting. Whereas peacemakers, they value reconciliation. They want real peace. They want real relationship, not just an absence of fighting. Hey, if you got to have a conflict to get to the reconciliation, then let's do that because the stakes are too high not to. Peacekeepers are motivated by fear. They're afraid of open conflict. They're afraid of change. They're afraid of exposure. Peacemakers, on the other hand, are motivated by love. They love people too much to not go through the upheaval of change even the upheaval of open conflict to get to reconciliation, to get to relationship, to get to an intimate relationship of love. See, following Jesus means being authentic. So what can we do? What can we do? I'm going to give you four steps to take. If you want to apply today's message, here's what you can do. Number one, ask God for humility and courage. Humility and courage. Now, this is important. You want to have humility because humility will keep you from being a judge. It'll remind you that we are saved by God's grace and his mercy alone. Humility keeps you from being judged. And courage keeps you from being a jester. Courage helps you to face conflict, helps you to face change, helps you to face those difficult conversations that need to be had in order for all of us to grow. And you go to God with this because we're talking about a change of character. Humility and courage are character issues. And only God can change character issues. Only God can help us to be humble and to be courageous. That's why we go to God. Our human nature wants to hide. Our human nature wants to be putting others down as a judge or lifting ourselves up as a jester. He wants us to be pointing out how bad other people are or how good I am. That's human nature. But being authentic is what God wants us to be. And being authentic is following Jesus. It takes supernatural intervention to be authentic. So ask God for humility and courage. Number two, ask for input. A lot of people ask, so how do I know that I'm really ready for an authentic relationship? It's really quite easy. And it's determined not by you. It's determined by the people around you. Do they feel they can be authentic with you? That's when you know you are ready to be authentic. That's when you know you are ready to no longer have an appearance of kindness at the expense of truthfulness. You can now be truthful because you have asked others for input. So in our connect groups, in our families, ask people, be open. They're probably not going to volunteer the information. Ask them, what do you see in me? What are my character defects? What do you think I need to be growing on? What do you think I need to be growing up with? And so it gives people permission to speak into our lives. So number one, ask God for humility and courage. Number two, ask for input. Number three, listen before speaking. So when you've asked for input, listen to everything people have to say because they have a perspective on your life that you don't have. And you could, like Peter, want to be defensive. That's normal. That's natural to try to defend yourself. Believe me, I know. But try to resist that temptation and just listen to what they have to say. So ask God for humility and courage. Ask for input. Listen before speaking. And then finally, number four. In love, be honest. You'll notice I left that one to the last. That is the last thing. If you want to be authentic, if you want to be honest, make sure that the people around you have permission to be honest with you. That gives the right foundation for intimate relationships. You don't start here. See, judges are honest without kindness. Jesters are kind without honesty. And we want to have both honesty and kindness together. Jesus was authentic because he loved Peter. John, in his letter, described Jesus as full of grace and truth. Grace and truth. Grace is undeserved kindness. Judges don't like undeserved kindness. They just want to dump on you. They just want to talk about other people's faults. But Jesus was full of grace, and so we need to be full of that undeserved kindness as well. Jesus was full of truth, and see, the problem with jesters is they don't like truth. They can't handle truth. They don't want to be so truthful that it might cause discomfort or change or even conflict. But Jesus was full of grace and truth, and if we are going to follow in his steps, we too need to be full of grace and truth. Many of us have hurt the relationships, the people in our lives. We've hurt our friends. We've hurt our spouse. We've hurt our children, our parents, our coworkers, because we've been a judge or we've been a jester. And religion wants us to be either one, to be a judge or a jester. It's all an attempt to gain God's favor, either pushing other people down or lifting ourselves up. But following Jesus means being authentic. So ask God for humility and courage. Ask for other people's input. Listen before speaking. And then in love, be honest. Intimate relationships require knowing and being known, and only authenticity will get you there. Not being a judge, not being a jester. Judges are not known because they don't talk about their own failings. They cover them up. They're happy to talk about other people's failings, not their own. They're not known. Judges are not known. Therefore, they can't have intimacy. Jesters are not known because they can't talk about what they're really feeling, what they're really thinking, and so they aren't known. And so intimacy eludes them as well. To be a follower of Jesus means being authentic. And we can be authentic because when we receive Christ as our Savior and Lord, He transforms us. He brings us acceptance to the Father, which means we have nothing to prove anymore. We don't have to earn God's favor. We don't have to be religious anymore. We don't have to prove our worth to God. We can stop trying to prove ourselves. So we don't have to be a judge or a jester. Followers of Jesus are the most well-placed people to be authentic on the planet because Jesus has already made us right with God. We have nothing left to prove with God. Jesus has proven it all. He has made us absolutely acceptable to our Father because of what He's done. All we do now is continue to become like Jesus, following Him, not having the appearance of kindness at the expense of truthfulness, but being completely authentic. That is my hope for me. It is my hope for you, for all the people listening, that we would be authentic and that we would have intimate relationships with others and with God as a result, as we follow Jesus. When we invite people to follow Jesus, we are inviting them into a life of authenticity because that is who Jesus is. Completely authentic, full of grace and truth.